So I'll just tell you a little bit about what this talk is about. I was very interested in the relationships between text and performance culture in South India, particularly in the context of Sri Vaishnava tradition. In addition to the regular liturgical recitation that they have of the Tamil canon known as the Divya Prabandham, they also have a kind of ritual performance that's very unique to them. And I was particularly interested in this particular performance tradition for a couple of reasons. One of which is the move towards kind of modernization, a process that's very similar to what happened to other performance cultures like Bharatanatyam and Carnatic music in the early 19th through the 20th century. So I was really interested in why this was happening and the kind of tension that existed within the community itself and the people who were sort of engaged in this process. So you'll have to excuse me, the talk is quite short today, so there'll be much that I don't actually flesh out, so if there's anything that I don't cover, please stop me and all. Srirangam, the island in the middle of the Kaveri River in Tamil Nadu, has long been revered by Sri Vaishnavas as the Bhuloka Vaikuntha, earthly Vaikuntha. It is the sacred and cosmic stage where Vishnu reclines to both create the play and to enjoy its performance. But several miles further down south, on the banks of another famous river, the Tambaraparani, is a small village of Alvar Tirunagari, central to the history, both mythic and otherwise, of the Sri Vaishnavas. It was, after all, in this village, under this very tamarind tree, that myth has does not close its leaves. That under this very tamarind tree, that Shatagopan Nammalvar, the 9th century Vaishnava poet, Tamil Vaishnava poet, sat from the moment of his birth for 16 long silent years, absorbed in meditation, waiting for the perfect disciple. And it was under this magical tree that never sleeps and never bears fruit that Madhurakavi, who followed a celestial light all the way from Kashi, sat at the feast of his master Shatagopan and received the 1102 verses of the Tiruvaimuri as revelation. But the story of the revelation of the canonical texts of Tamil Sri Vaishnavism does not conclude here. The legend thus continued that the Tiruvaimuri was subsequently lost until several centuries later, Nathamuni, a 10th century teacher and philosopher and considered to be the first preceptor of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradayas, recovered it once again through an extraordinary feat of devotion, the tireless repetition of Madhurakavi's panegyric to Shatagopan. So great was Nathamuni's dedication that Nammalvar gifted him with not just the Tiruvaimuri, but another 3,000 verses that came to be collected as the Nalayada Divya Prabandham, or the sacred collection of 4,000 songs. But the remarkable, nay, miraculous story of Nathamuni, and what in a very real sense represents the pivotal moment in the birth of the Sri Vaishnava traditions, does not end here. In a rare nod to the very real historical processes and concerns that accompany the impulses that guide compilation and canonization, the story describes Nathamuni's initiative to institutionalize the Divya Prabandham in general and the Tiruvaimuri in particular. Framed as a desire to stave off the inevitable attrition of time, the story tells us that Nathamuni sets the Tiruvaimuri and the rest of the Divya Prabandham, so the entire 4,000 verses, to music, develops a sparse gestural vocabulary to reveal the esoteric meaning of the texts. He teaches his two nephews this new performance form and establishes a temple-based hereditary ritual performance tradition that is known as Arayar Seve, or the service of the Arayar. So this is the line of the transmission. So it goes from Vishnu is supposed to reveal the text to Namalvar, who reveals it to Madhurakavi, then it's lost, and then it's recovered by Nathamuni, and then Nathamuni teaches it to the Arayars. Today, the surviving Arayars are based in three temples in South India and trace their lineages to one of these two nephews. It is, of course, no surprise that Srirangam and Alvar Tirunagari preserve the Arayar Seve because they are the two most important of the 108 Sri Vaishnava sites called the Divyadeshas. And both sites, Alvar Tirunagari and Srirangam, claim an authenticity for itself. So here you see the middle red dot is Srirangam, and the bottom red dot is where Alvar Tirunagari is, so they're quite separated by a lot of distance. And the other point you should remember is Srirangam is in what at that time would have been Chola territory, and further down south is Pandya territory. So it's also a question of dynastic difference as well. The authenticity of the Arayar Seve is also intimately linked to a sense of exclusivity. Arayar Seve is performed only by Brahmin Sri Vaishnava men from hereditary families and is expressed in an adamant refusal to allow recording in any new or modern media. Given Arayar Seve's resistance to modernity, in this paper I explore efforts to recover and revive it by people from outside these hereditary communities in an attempt to make its practice relevant to contemporary Sri Vaishnavas with people from outside these communities. So I organized the essay in three parts. So I first begin with a brief description of the Arayar Seve, with a special emphasis on the Arayar Seve's dramatic forms, and then move to focusing on the efforts of one individual to modernize this performance tradition, and then conclude by talking about a woman who has sort of entered the fray. Arayar Seve is a ritual performance form that has two major constituent modes, what are referred to as Nitya Kaikarya, or daily service, and Utsava Kaikarya, or festival service. The daily service usually, and here I just want to pause to say, Kaikarya in the context of Sri Vaishnavism really refers to a loving service to God, right? So it's more than just service, it's a kind of way in which you approach Vishnu. The daily service usually involves leading the goshti, or the gathering of reciters, in the daily liturgical recitation of the Divya Prabandham, which takes place every day at the temple. In this regard, the Arayar Seve and the Arayar himself, the performer, are indistinguishable from his male Brahmin counterparts, who are known as Adhyapakas, right? They are the regular reciters. The difference is here, when the Arayar is performing as part of the Goshti, as part of an Adhyapaka, he will not be wearing the ceremonial garb, which is indicated by the crown, a set of symbols, and the garland. So when he's part of the reciter, that is, when he's performing the daily Kaikarya, the Nitya Kaikarya, he is indistinguishable from the rest of the group, except that he is the leader of the group. But an Arayar literally means, or it's related to the Tamil word Arasan, or king. Okay, so he's sort of seen as the king of the text, the leader of the group. When he is performing in this kind of ritual hereditary role, he usually wears this, always wears the ceremonial garb. On the other hand, during festival performances, the Arayar is marked as different through his ritual accoutrements, conical hat, and particularly the symbols or thalam, and his performance is always given a separate space and place and time in the ritual activities of the temple that of the temples that continue to support Arayar Seve. In the context of Utsava Kainkarya, or the festival service, Ariyar Seva encapsulates a gestural vocabulary for specific verses from the Divya Prabandham to illustrate the esoteric meanings. So here you have an example. These are based on the medieval Manipravala commentaries composed from around the late 11th century. In addition, Arayars also enact dramas such as the Mattayadi Utsavam and the Muthukari, which I will discuss in just a moment. The most elaborate form of the Arayar Seva takes place at the three temples of Alvar Tirunagari, Srirangam and Srivilliputtur. All are in the southern part of the state of Tamil Nadu. They are all incidentally, and perhaps not incidentally, associated with the Thengalai tradition, that is the southern branch of Sri Vaishnavas. And the most elaborate form of the performance takes place during what is known as the annual festival of recitation that takes place in the month of December, and it's 20 days long. Okay. So these three distinct forms perhaps correspond to the various development stages of the Ariyar Seva, with the earliest being what is known as Adhyayana Utsavam, or the festival of recitation, instituted possibly around the time of Ramanuja in the 12th century. Commentaries for the poems of the Alvar begin to be composed during the late 11th and early 12th century. Given Ramanuja's involvement with restructuring temple ritual, particularly at Srirangam, it is likely that the gestural interpretation was instituted around this time. Furthermore, the greatest agreement in performance style and mode at all three sites is in the liturgical recitation and in the commentarial interpretation. Given the massive restructuring of ritual activity that occurred under the Vijayanagara and Nayaka kings, that's between the 14th and the 17th century, and the blossoming of variety of performance cultures at this time, it is likely that the dramatic forms of Ariyar Seva developed in the post-14th century, and possibly as late as the 17th century. And I would venture that the date is more likely to be the 17th rather than the 14th. Dramas like the Mattayadi Utsavam, which I'll talk about in a moment, for instance, are not common to all three temples and are only performed at Alvar Tirunagari and Srirangam. While at Srirangam, it is performed in April under the auspices of what is known as the Panguni Uttaram festival. In Alvar Tirunagari, it is performed on the last day of the annual festival of recitation and dovetails into Nammalvar's Moksha, the climactic event of the entire festival of recitation. The Mattayadi Utsavam celebrates a quarrel and eventual reconciliation between Vishnu and his main consort, Sri, known locally as Ranganayaki and Adinayaki. In the Mattayadi Utsavam, literally, Mattayadi means to hit with sticks. Okay, so Vishnu is going to be hit with sticks in this festival. In the Mattayadi Utsavam, Vishnu is imagined to return from a hunting trip, during which time he is presumed to have visited the home of one of his many consorts. Lakshmi, incensed at his dalliance, shuts the door of the temple and refuses him entry. After much pleading, Vishnu is eventually allowed entry, only to have the quarrel continue inside. At this point, when it appears that Lakshmi cannot be pacified, Nammalvar appears, acts as a mediator, and effects the reconciliation. Thus, in Alvar Tirunagari, the Mattayadi Utsavam is a means of asserting Nammalvar's credentials for moksha, and in doing so argues for his supremacy as a mediator par excellence, replacing Lakshmi in this role. That is, while in the Alvar poems, in the Divya Prabandham, the poets entreat Lakshmi to intervene on their behalf, here it is Nammalvar who is called to mediate a dispute between a couple who are never to be separated. In contrast, in Srirangam, during the Panguni festival in April, the image of the handsome bridegroom, Aragiya Manavalan, travels far and wide in an expression of his sovereignty over erstwhile hostile territory. Although during this festival, Nammalvar is once again summoned to reconcile the quarrelling parties, it does not occur in the context of a festival that is exclusively meant to exalt his special status within the Sri Vaishnava pantheon of 12 saints. Paul Younger has demonstrated quite convincingly that the Srirangam Matteri Utsavam has as much to do with the expression of subsectarian identity and rivalry that is between the northern branch of Sri Vaishnavas and the southern branch of Sri Vaishnavas as with the expression of kingship via the deity. If the Matteri Utsavam represents a divine quarrel, the Muthukuri is the exact opposite. It is a drama of divination, where the Arayar, as a fortune teller, divines the fortune of a heroine who pines for union with Vishnu. Common to all three temples and fairly similar in execution, the Muthukuri is likely to have developed at the same time as what are known as Kuravanji dance dramas, for it shares several similar conventions such as elaborate descriptions of the fortune teller and the hills from which she descends. The Kuravanji is a genre that develops out of the 17th century. It's a distinctly Tamil genre. It usually features a traveling fortune teller who descends from the hills onto the plains and consults a high-born princess or a high-born heroine on her love sickness, usually for a god or for her deity. What is interesting about the Kuravanji dance dramas is that they were performed by the traveling troops of Devadasis, dancing girls who were attached to the temple. So it was a very popular entertainment during festivals. So it's interesting that the Sri Vaishnava tradition develops its own kind of Kuravanji performance with using its own kind of liturgical ritual tradition. And a further interesting note is that images of Kurathis or gypsies or fortune tellers begin to appear on the temple walls and temple pillars at the same time. So you will see images of larger than life-size images of Kurathis on pillars of these very temples that we're talking about, holding a winnowing fan or engaged in an act of fortune telling. So it's clearly something that was happening in the 17th century, that they were very interested in this genre. The Arayars claim that the Kuravanji developed from the Muthukuri, but in my opinion, it's unlikely. It's probably the other way around. It is performed, the Muthukuri, literally meaning the divination with pearls, is performed during the same festival, that is the festival of recitation, at all three temples, Srirangam, Srivilliputtur, and Alvar Tirunagiri, but on three different dates. And this is an important point because in Srivilliputtur, the temple of Andal, it is performed three times and takes on an added significance because it is articulated in terms of Andal's auto/hagiography, where she is seen as the heroine eliciting the fortune telling about her union. So it's this very strange kind of moment in the way it's performed in Srivilliputtur. I mentioned these two dramatic forms of Arayar Seva here, and there are others as well, to make two points. In the Arayar self-representations, the Arayar Seva is conceived of as a comprehensive form, an embodied commentary on the Nalayada Devi Prabandham. It is referred to as, it is seen as the perfect realization of the concept of Muttamar, or the three Tamils, where Tamar, the language Tamar, or any literary composition in Tamil, reaches its most perfect form only when it is expressed in three medial forms: poetry, what is referred to as iyal, isai, and natakam, prose, music, and drama. Okay, so Arayar Seva is seen as expressing all of these three things. So it's conceived of as a comprehensive form, an embodied commentary on the Nalayada Devi Prabandham. While the atonal recitation of the Devi Prabandham consciously seeks to mimic Vedic recitation, and in which they are not really distinguished from other members of the Goshti when the Arayars perform here, they thus assert the legitimacy of the Devi Prabandham as the Tamil Veda. These dramatic performances, on the other hand, bring to the forefront the accessibility of these very same canonized texts. While this dual formation is itself not unusual, because you see it in the context of the Tamil Shaiva tradition, it points to where and how Arayar Seva has accommodated change. Vedic-style recitation imbues the Divya Prabandham with an unshakable authority and legitimacy. To put it simply, to alter the atonal recitation of the Divya Prabandham is in some fundamental way to challenge its status as the Tamil Veda. So, for instance, the Divya Prabandham recitation will be like the ethos like Margari Tingal Madini Rainda Nannalal Nirada Podvir Podumino Nedirayir Sir Malgum Mai Padi Selva Chirumir Gal. So that's the kind of very, it's shared across the, regardless of who's reciting it, that's generally how they recite it. And this doesn't change. The Arayar Sevai's dramas, whose presence in the repertoire is explained by the Arayars as meant just for entertainment, is where the performance becomes malleable and flexible enough to become sites of change and alteration. It is no surprise that in the contemporary imagination, Arayar Sevai is almost exclusively identified with the performance of Abhinaya, or the sparse gestural interpretation of specific verses of the Divya Prabandham and the dramas of divination and divine quarrel. And as a side note, I'd like to point out that what's interesting is that there are other dramatic forms, such as what's known as the Pallupattu, but this does not achieve that. This has not received any kind of attention or popularity, partly because Pallupattu is generally seen as associated with sort of low caste. It's sort of seen as a folk form. So there's a caste issue here at play as well. So when the time comes to revive and sort of quote unquote modernize Arayar Sevai, it is the dramas that receive attention. The practitioners of Arayar Sevai make claims of infallible authenticity and cleave to the notion of the service as a divine mandate that cannot and indeed must not be replicated in any other medium. They resist all attempts to video or audio record them, and even photography claims, and even they don't allow photography, claiming that it violates their sacred mandate. Okay. These photographs I got after several years of working with the Arayar Sevai, and there's a long story. I'll be happy to tell you about it, about what happened after these photographs were taken. Arayar Sevai is seen as a loving service, a kaingarya, meant to be performed in front of Vishnu and his divine royal court. And the Arayars fear that these modern instruments of replication, and this is very important, the idea of being able to reproduce willy-nilly, and replication reproduction will bring Arayar Sevai into non-pious secular contexts such as this one. Thus, even as the Arayars and their Arayar Sevai face becoming fossilized museum pieces, for the most part, they refuse any attempts to help with preservation and or the continuation of their service. And at this point, I might mention that they only survive in three temples, and they're the last of their families. So there's just, I think, at each of the temples, there's only one more generation left. And I think at one temple, that there's not even that. It is perhaps in this light, that in the past 25 years we have seen renewed interest in the revival of Arayar Sevai from outside the hereditary communities. So I'm going to focus now on one such figure, perhaps the most famous of the Arayar Sevai revivalists. His name is Sri Rama Bharati. The following obituary notice appeared in the Hindu, the English language paper, on November 8, 2000. Sri Rama Bharati attained Acharyan Tiruvadi on Sunday 5/11/2000. He has been propagating Divya Prabandham through Arayar Sevai at Tirunarayana Swami Temple, Jaladampete. Founder, Shadagopan Tirunarayana Swami Divya Prabandha Pathashala, former Deputy Director, Doordarshan Trivandrum. In posting this obituary to the Bhakti List archive on November 11th, a poster had this to say about Sri Rama Bharati. And for those of you who don't know, the Bhakti List Archive was a very popular listserv that operated for about 10 years out of California, that was run primarily for Sri Vaishnavas, diasporic Sri Vaishnavas, and then it there was a lot of infighting, primarily, oddly enough, or perhaps not oddly enough at all, around issues of sectarian difference between Thengalai and Vadagalai, and it was eventually shut down sometime, I think it was in 1999, that it slowly shut down. But I think it was maybe 2 years later that it was retired. But the listserv has been archived on srivaishnava.org. So this is what the November 11th poster had to say. Sri Ram, as he used to be called, was a brilliant student of Delhi University who went to the US late 60s and early 70s for his PhD in physics. During his thesis work, he is said to have attained an awakening and left forthwith for India. I love this. This writing is so wonderful. Left forthwith for India, whereupon he went back to his school in New Delhi and started teaching the students devotional hymns. Soon he got married and worked as an employee of the AIR, the All India Radio. His true love was, however, the Divya Prabandham, which he learned formally under the Vatnamamalai Matha. This is a very important monastery for the Sri Vaishnavas. He also obtained guidance on the difficult and intricate subject of Arayar Seving. In his last years, he ran a Prabandham school for poor villages in Pallikaranai, in the outskirts of Madras, and rendered yeoman service towards popularizing the vanishing art of Arayar Seving. He has, to his credit, a scholarly work on Arayar Seving and many tape recordings of the Alvar Pasarams, or Alvar songs, rendered in a ragam, or melodic mode. For the last few years, he was suffering from cancer. He has now succumbed to it. It is very hard to see in modern times a true Bhagavata like him, who genuinely epitomized the spirit of service and sacrifice. So here, the notion of Kaimkarya. As these notices indicate, Sri Rama Bharati, 1949 to 2000, was most closely associated with the revival of Arayar Seving, which he regarded as the ideal means to reveal the beauty of Alvar poetry. The story of his life, encapsulated in the response above, saw him as a dedicated Vaishnava committed to promoting this form. Along with his wife Saubhagya Lakshmi, he established the Sri Sadagopan Trinarayana Swami Divya Prabandha Pathashala, such a fabulous name, dedicated to his work on Arayar Seving in Jaladampete, a suburb of Chennai. He authored a book entitled Arayar Seving, Theatre Expression in Sri Vaishnava Worship, which presents his own understanding of the form, which he characterizes as total theatre, or alternately, a one-man show. So this is Sri Rama Bharati, and this is the book that he published. The book is divided into 12 chapters, each dedicated to an important composition from the Divya Prabandha. Along with translations and assigning a Carnatic raga to each pasaram or song, Sri Rama Bharati provides on occasion a description of Arayar Abhinaya, or interpretation, which clearly represents his reimagining of the form. For instance, in writing of verse 16 of Tirupave, Arndal's composition, Sri Rama Bharati has this to say about the performance. The Arayar now stands, and a boy secures the gajje, or the ankles, on the Arayar, ankle bells, on the Arayar's ankles. The Arayar begins to dance, first in pure rhythm, then flowing into Abhinaya, or mime. The poem comes to life. People forget their separate identities and become one, like the flowers in Arndal's garland. Certainly, this attempt to record and write down the procedures of Arayar Seving is not new. The Arayars have a manuscript that they refer to as Tambiran Padi, or according to the manuscript according to the master, which encapsulates the entire repertoire. What is interesting about Sri Rama Bharati is how he links the comprehensive quality of Arayar Seving that sets it apart for Sri Vaishnava worship and its crucial role in inducing states of ecstasy in both the performer and the audience. In one way, one might understand this as a natural expression of a fundamental Sri Vaishnava concept. One understands both the Arvar poem and its commentary as an Anubhava Grantha, or a text of enjoyment. Yet, there is obviously something else going on here. Who is Sri Rama Bharati, and why did he feel the need to step in to promote, revive, and restructure Arayar Seving? And why does he theorize Arayar Seving as a performance mode that goes beyond ritual and touches the mystical dimension? These are not ways in which the Arayars themselves talk about Arayar Seving, right? There's nothing about, in fact, when you watch Arayar Seving, it's almost very dry. There's no sort of feeling. It's not meant to, it's an expressive form that's not necessarily meant to make you fall into a swoon or kind of have this kind of sympathetic rasa or anything like this. You'll see the emotion on the face is almost entirely always blank. You know, so when you watch Arayar Seving, Arayar Seving is a hereditary performance tradition practiced by Brahmin men. Sri Rama Bharati did not belong to an Arayar family, but he was a Brahmin, but stepped in to revive a tradition that was relatively unknown and losing its relevance in the modern world, because nobody has the patience to sit and watch you know, an old Brahmin man sitting in a temple, performing something that's not particularly entertaining. Given that the Arayars were reluctant to share information or teach their art to anyone outside their community, Sri Rama Bharati took it upon himself to create a new Arayar Sevai that he christened Devagana, or Divine Music, but he also called it Arayar Sevai. He was so successful in his revival and in his identification with Arayar Sevai was so complete that when the Ahobhila Matha, and Ahobhila Matha is another very important, probably the most powerful of the Mathas of the Sri Vaishnavas, that when the Ahobhila Matha's English version of its magazine Narasimha Priya ran a special edition on Arayar Sevai in January 2004, it is Sri Rama Bharati and his wife Saubhagya Lakshmi who represent and speak for the form. We can only speculate on the impact of Sri Rama Bharati's job as the deputy director of AIR and Doordarshan, the two sort of national organs of music and dance and sort of programming in India in the 2000, in that time, in enabling this identification. On the back cover of the Narasimha Priya magazine from 2004, this photograph appears. The layout in visual form hierarchizes Sri Rama Bharati's version of Arayar Sevai. He is featured at the center of the page performing Abhinaya, reclining Vishnu here at the bottom, flanked above by two further Abhinaya poses, that one who carried the bow, referring to Rama. Okay, so that's that one, and this one is carrying the bow. Below him are the unsmiling, forward-facing portrait of the four Arayars of Sri Ranga. Sri Rama Bharati's Arayar Sevai is dynamic, active, his gestures easily recognizable, even if the particular Alvar song is not. The Sri Rangam Arayars arrayed below him, as identified in the text as the traditional Arayars of Sri Rangam, in contrast appear unmoving, fossilized, and static. If one turns to the contents of the same magazine, there are several articles on various aspects of Arayar Sevai, but only one line drawing, that features an Arayar, and the rest all feature Sri Rama Bharati. There is one article come interview given by Saubhagya Lakshmi, Sri Rama Bharati's wife, that is accompanied by a photograph featuring Sri Rama Bharati and his wife. Oh, sorry. So you see how she's the one playing the drone, the tambura, and he's performing on stage there. Missing from the pages of the magazine are even photographs of the Arayars of Melkote, Srivilliputtur, or Arvar Trinagri, although all articles make frequent mention of them. For all intents and purposes, the contents of the magazine reflect the layout of its back cover. The future of Arayar Sevai is embodied in the figure of Arayar Sri Rama Bharati, someone from within the Sri Vaishnava Brahmin community, but one outside the hereditary lineages, perhaps nowhere better exemplified than in this image that accompanies Arayar Sevai, a historical perspective. In all of the images, Sri Rama Bharati is shown not singing, but dancing and performing Abhinaya. And this is despite his insistence that Arayar Sevai, as he is constituted, is Devagana, or divine music. When the interviewer for the magazine, Chitra Vasudevan, raised the question of justification for an outsider practicing and performing Arayar Sevai, Saubhagya Lakshmi, in 2003, had this to say: "Yes, there were problems in accepting an outsider. Actually, there is a certain justification to this non-acceptance because the Arayar Sevai is an honor bestowed upon a certain group of people. Initially, we could only go around the temple singing and dancing. Sri Rama Bharati was not allowed to wear his headgear as he was not born in the family. Despite all the opposition, Sri Rama Bharati never gave up, convinced as he was that he was duty-bound to bring back the tradition of temple music. One might ask what constituted being duty-bound. Indeed, what would justify remaking and reviving Arayar Sevai? In this same interview, Saubhagya Lakshmi tells us that Sri Rama Bharati felt that, quote, if Arya Sevai was revived, everybody would be drawn to the great Vaishnava tradition. So it was a kind of evangelical purpose. In one regard, his project may be seen as fitting in with the original purpose of Arya Sevai as a means to propagate Vaishnavism, while also seen as staving off the natural attrition of time. But the subtext of this duty that Saubhagya Lakshmi speaks of acts as a code for that which is divinely inspired. And recall here that Sri Rama Bharati's characterization of Arya Sevai as a means to access the mystical dimension. Throughout the interview, she repeatedly asserts that this was a divinely directed mission. He was taught music in his sleep. He was guided by Nammalvar to set certain verses to particular melodic modes while he was at the temple in Arvar Tirunagari. But most significantly, Saubhagya Lakshmi, when asked about the authenticity of their interpretation, says that while they worked in Arvar Tirunagari, Nammalvar's birthplace, where, in fact, the whole Divya Prabandham is supposed to have begun, she says, God had willed that, like Sri Natha Muni, we would also complete our work here. Such a narrative firmly establishes Sri Rama Bharati's divinely ordained legitimacy to perform Arya Sevai, equating his project with Natha Muni's recovery of the Nalada Divya Prabandham. So it's almost like saying, well, Natha Muni instituted the Arya Sevai when the Divya Prabandham was going to be lost. Now, the Arya Sevai is itself going to be lost, so I'm going to institute a new kind of Arya Sevai like Natha Muni. I'm the kind of this new Natha Muni for this new age. Duty here then is divinely directed and even mandated, and it neatly sidesteps the issues of hereditary rights. But it also does something else. It situates Sri Rama Bharati as the new Natha Muni, or more appropriately, a Natha Muni for a new age and time. His Arya Sevai is equally new, the performance more dramatic, inflected with the influence of Bharatanatyam, and that's a whole other can of worms, and presumably more democratic. That is, it's available to Sri Vaishnava boys from non-hereditary families. So this is Patashala that he founded outside of Madras. So suddenly, other Brahmin boys can be trained to perform Arya Sevai. Look at these little Aryas with their little hats. As was the case with these young boys from Padma Sheshadri Balabhavan, one of the hotbeds of Tamil Brahmanism in Tamil Nadu. Okay, Padma Sheshadri Balabhavan School in Chennai. Still others can claim divine inspiration and begin to perform Arya Sevai. As was the case with these two men, Madhusudanan and Srikant, performing Muthukuri, the drama of divination and apologize for the darkness of the photo. Maybe I can turn off the light. So this is Madhusudanan and Srikant, who performed the Arya Sevai in 2008 at the Jaladampetai. Jaladampetai school, the Muthukuri, the divination with pearls, based on one viewing of the performance in Sri Ranga. Okay, so they had only seen it one time, they had no training, they performed it only one time, and they sort of decided they were going to perform it. Suddenly we see props appearing, divining coal or stick, a basket, and we witness the performance of kummi, this dance that the women are performing, that used to be performed by Devadasis, and that moment is always left blank in contemporary Arya Sevai performance, but here is now undertaken by Sri Vaishnava Brahmin women associated with the Patashala. Here is Arya Sevai for the modern urban Sri Vaishnava, cast into the now familiar aesthetic idiom of Bharatanatyam, okay, with the full costuming, with the kind of way the body is held, and the way in which interpretation is itself imagined. It moves into a very linear kind of interpretation, which is what Bharatanatyam does now. But while Madhusudanan and Srikant, the two performers here, claim no association or affiliation with the Sri Shadagopa Tirunarayana Swami Divya Prabandha Patashala, and the work of Sri Rama Bharati and his wife. Undoubtedly, his efforts and performances on national TV enabled and perhaps even emboldened their own creation of a Hari Arayar Seve. And they spoke of combining Arayar Seve with other performance genres such as Bharatanatyam and, strangely enough, Kudiyattam, which is a Sanskrit theatre form in Kerala. And as if to make real this link, Sri Rama Bharati is enshrined at the temple he established in Jaladampete. Right there. Consider that Srirangam, Alvar, Tirunagiri and Srivilliputtur are spatially in the cultural margins of Tamil Nadu. Here is Sri Rama Bharati iconized, wearing his conical Arayar hat with symbols and hat, facing his beloved deity at his personal sacred site. Apotheosized into a saint, children at the Patashala sing panegyrics such as the Sri Rama Bharati Vartapatta, or the praise to Sri Rama Bharati. Praised as the one who took the path of Nathamuni and rejected material comfort to do so, he is painted in these songs as both Alvar and Arayar, and the Arayar Seve and the hereditary practitioners, much like in the case of Bharatanatyam, are delinked from a historical past and any social reality. In this characterization, issues of lost lands, of ritual status, and the Arayar's resulting penury, or the association of ritual status and performances, are completely elided. This attitude is nowhere better encapsulated than in the final paragraph of the last article in Sri Rama Bharati's book, Arayar Seve. Authored by one K.S. Srinivasan, who is Sri Rama Bharati's father, but identified in the book only as Jawaharlal Nehru's fellow, Arayar Seve concludes with the following passionate statement. In this style and form, Arayar Seve seems to remain exclusive to the inner circle. What is called for is a review, beginning with the appellation itself. Why not rename this as something like Bhakti Marga or Pushti Marga, as Vallabhacharya called it, while propagating the Krishna cult in the north? Times change, so do we. Tamil Nadu has shown the way. Dasi Atam, which denoted what women would enact, those who were dedicated to temples and later to ruling chieftains, was redesignated Bharatanatyam about 60 years ago to become a respected theatrical presentation. In fact, in its present form, Arayar Seve itself has been presented recently at the Music Academy in Chennai. It all depends on the emphasis, religion or art, or a merger of the two. And finally, I want to just end by talking about the where this performance has eventually gone. So Sri Rama Bharati is one such person. The other person who is involved in this is a woman named Usha Narayana, who is also a Sri Vaishnava Brahmin woman, who is a Bharatanatyam dancer, who has taken Arayar Seve, again has no formal training because the Arayars will not teach it to anybody, the performance to anybody outside their community, and they certainly will not teach it to a woman. And she simply, based on her training as a Bharatanatyam dancer, has combined it and created her own dance form, which she has renamed Shringa Nrityam. And she has petitioned the Sangeeta Natak Academy, which is the major governing body for the arts in India, the national governing body, to include Shringa Nrityam and recognize it as one of the classical dance forms of India. Okay, and so here she is, you can see her dressed in her nine yards, which is the typical dress for a Brahmin woman. She's wearing it in the Sri Vaishnava style. And you've got her students dressed in the back, where you know, they're wearing their dhoti and their angavastras. And what is interesting, of course, here is that she's performing this at a temple in California, this is Pomona in Southern California, but her back is to the deity, the sanctum, the temple shrine, the Garbhagriha is behind her. And Arayar Seve is always supposed to be performed to the deity. Okay, so Usha Narayanan has become very active in trying to promote this. So what's interesting, of course, is that both efforts to modernize, revive, all of these kinds of things that are going on with Arirseve that mimic what happened with Bharatanatyam. That's the kind of template that they're following. All try begin with trying to rename the form. With her, it's Shringanrityam, and with Sri Rama Bharati, it is Devagana. And here is her. She was interviewed at Indian Express, where she is discusses how she came to Arirseve. And again, it repeats the familiar motif of being divinely inspired, that God came to her and and directed her to take on this form. So you see above her performing it again with her troupe of dancers, and below you see her performing it on stage in sort of a Bharatanatyam costume, almost as Bharatanatyam, but she distinguishes it from them. So I actually have a couple of YouTube clips. This is what's interesting about it, is that you can see them on YouTube, which the Arayars themselves will not allow you to do. They freak out, like, if you even... So here is Usha Narayanan performing. And you can see what... I can't show you what real Arirseve looks like because I don't have any video of it. But I don't know how good the bandwidth is here, so it may not play. I guess.
And has been recognized as the originator of the 8th classical dance form named Shringanrityam, a stage adaptation of Arirseve, an ancient temple dance tradition of India. Shringanrityam is originally perceptive.
I don't know why there's no video.
As mentioned in the Nati Shastra and in the earlier Puranas, and further.
I don't know why there's no video. I'm sorry. Let me see. Let me see whether you can get Sri Rama Bharati's. Maybe this one will come. There. So the people. So on the right-hand side, the chubby person is Bharatanatyam. And on the left side, I'm sorry, I don't know how else to distinguish. This one is the white-dressed balloon pants people are supposed to be doing Arirseve. But anybody who's ever seen Arirseve will know that there's no relationship to it at all, because it's sort of a bizarre mix of Bharatanatyam, Odissi, Kathak, and a little bit of Arirseve gestural interpretation. Arirseve has no rhythmic movement at all. None. Or very minimal. So this is technically Bharatanatyam. And they're very poor dancers, but supposed to give you... I mean, it's just... I mean, there's nothing kind that you can say about it. But. So, I won't torture you any further. Let me see if I can get you the Sri Rama Bharati... Sri Rama Bharati is better. It's not as bad as. The This is from Tiruvaimuri. Nammalvar Tiruvaimuri. So here, first, there is no, this, he's singing this in Carnatic music style, and Arayar Seve is never sung like this. It's always, even during the performance, the gestural performance, it's always that atonal recitation. They never sing like this. And they sure as hell will not smile. So that would be what he just did, is a very distinctive Arayar Seve move.
Similarly, got his back to him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think there may be another image in front of him. This is again a very, also very Arayar Seve. So I'll just stop it. You get me an idea. Okay, so that's.
Tell us about why not photographing the.
What
happened?
When first they wouldn't allow me to photograph. They just said no. We won't allow you to do it. In fact, initially when I first started, my project began when I was in Srivilliputtur, when I was doing my work on Andal, and I was interested in the Andal in performance, and that's how I got interested in Arayar Seve. So initially they wouldn't allow me to even do audio recordings of them reciting, you know, when they just wander around. They'll always have somebody standing right next to me to make sure I wasn't secretly recording.
Did they explain why? Since people can see it and hear it.
Yeah, the reason that they state is that they that it's for divine purposes. It should only be performed in front of God, and it should only be performed at these specific moments, right? When during these ritually sanctioned moments. But I think it has more to do with fear of the fact that they're not relevant anymore, and that if these people can watch it, if you record it, then somebody, you can show it, you can learn from it, and suddenly you can be your own Arayar, right? So I think that is really the heart of why they're so fiercely guarded. Although they do claim that it's a divinely mandated thing, and the reasons that they give you are, you know, you could go and play it at some time, you know, even if we're performing it before God, you could play it at some place, you know, where, and even then it's sort of seen as a divine performance. So if you're playing it like right now, it sort of desacralizes it. So that's one of the sort of the esoteric reason. But I think it really has to do with, you know, their anxiety around ritual status, their relevance, because there's a lot of, in each of the three temples, the situation is slightly different. They have different kinds of ritual status. In like Srivilliputtur, the Arayars and the priests do not get along, so they're constantly fighting. And as a result of that, the Arayars there are just adamant. They won't allow you to record, do anything, because that's their way of asserting their power. In Alvarthirugri, the priests get along pretty well with Arayar, partly because the Arayars, one of the Arayars, there are two of them, has been working as an accountant for a number of years, and he sort of, this is his sort of like other job now, because, you know. So I think, so because of their better economic status, they are treated better in Alvarthirugri.
But you did manage two pictures.
Yes, so what happened after several years of working with them, the Arayars in Srivilliputtur agreed to allow me to photograph one festival, just this Muthukuri, one time. And but as soon as the photography was completed, they insisted that I turn over. They first asked for like 10 copies of the entire performance, and then they insisted that I turn over the negatives. Mm. And I refused, but they said, you know, you have to turn it over because you could, you know, misuse it. And then when I went back a couple of years later, they were really angry with me because somebody had told them that I had published the photographs on the internet, which I had not. That they said that you betrayed us, and I said no, like, you can look on the internet, I haven't, you know, published any of these photographs. And then the priests at the temple got very angry with me that I was talking with the Arayars, and so they told me that if I continued to be friends with the Arayars, that they would not allow me to come into the temple anymore, because they're having such a massive fight. At the other temple in Alvarthirugri, where the Arayars are better off, the Arayars secured permission to allow me to photograph and actually video the performance, which was the Matariyotsavam, the beating Vishnu with a stick festival. But what happened at that festival, suddenly midway through, maybe it was because my husband was with me and he's not Indian, or maybe they just decided they'd... I don't know what happened, but midway through the festival, they suddenly got really agitated, and a whole bunch of priests converged around us and told us that we needed to stop taking photographs and videotaping it. And they were about to snatch the cameras, and you know, and we stopped. So we don't have a full record of those two festivals. Mm. So in that case, it was not the Arayars, but it was the priests who felt like it was not all right for me to videotape it and photograph it, and they got very, very angry, but why, I don't know. It was very strange. But they are really very guarded. They won't tell you, they won't teach you anything. If you ask them questions, can you explain to me what was happening here, they won't answer you. But yeah,
so no sense at all
I would not. I think in their view, no, like not what I'm doing. But for the Alvarthirugri Arayar, they had the manuscript, it was in pretty bad shape, and I digitized it, and it was in a script that they couldn't read any longer. So that was, it was in Grantha. So that we put the script into Tamil. I digitized it for them. I put it into Tamil script. I printed it out. I gave them like a CD and a hard copy and everything that they are able to use. That they're willing at Alvarthirugri. At Srivilliputtur, I've only seen the manuscript from a distance. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, here's the manuscript. You know, they wouldn't even let me take a photo of the manuscript. So, so it's a question of academically, yes, we want you to preserve it, but there also the sense is, oh, it will be preserved in, you know, if God wants to preserve it, well, God will preserve it, you know, and he will help, he will find a way to help us, you know, this is, you know, we're doing, you know, we've been managing for all these years, so we'll just manage on, you know, so that's sort of their perspective. And what's interesting, of course, is that then you have all of these people from outside, and they're very upset about, you know, they know about Sri Ramabharata. And that's one of the reasons when I first met them, they were very hesitant because they thought I was going to be another one of these people who's just going to take the stuff and start performing. And I was like, no, I'm not a performer, I'm a scholar. And, but still, you know, there's a lot of anxiety, a lot of distrust. They are very unhappy. In fact, the magazine, the Narasimha Priya magazine with Sri Rama Bharati featured as the Arayar, I didn't know about that magazine, and it was the Arayar of Alvar Tirunagiri showed it to me, and he was like, look at this, this is what has happened to us, he said to me as he gave it to me. And he was very, very upset. They said that they came to talk to them, but there are no photos of any of the Arayars in the magazine of Sri Viliputtu or Alvar Tirunagiri, nowhere in the magazine. So you sort of see this kind of, and it's very similar to what's happened with other hereditary performance traditions in the South, like Bharatanatyam in particular, where you sort of see the kind of delinking of this past, and you sort of all these communities saying, well, we need to rescue it, because the people, the hereditary communities, aren't interested in preserving it, so we're going to have to preserve it for them, you know, just... And we're going to have to rescue it, and we've got to regenerate it and make it new for this kind of new nation. And obviously here with the Arayar Seve for the community, in it's all about, it's very much entrenched with caste issues. You know, it's about being, it's all the people, you know, they say it's democratic, it's available to everybody, but all the kids learning the Divya Prabandham, all Brahmins, all the kids performing Arayar Seve at Sri Rama Bharati's Patashala are all boys. There were no girls who performed it. So it's still very much embedded within issues of caste and gender as well. So,
are non-Vaishnavites allowed to see these performances?
Yes, yes. Anybody can see it. As long as you can go into the temple, you can see it.
Not necessarily the Vaishnavites.
No. Anybody can watch it. It's actually in Srirangam. Interestingly, the performance takes place at the fourth prakara. You know, Srirangam has seven prakaras. It takes place on the fourth prakara, which is the last prakara that traditionally was the last place that Dalits now call them. That was the last prakara that you could go into. Past that, you can't. So it's performed. It's almost as though the performance is coming out. But now, of course, anybody can go and watch the performance as long as you can.
Do they follow strict vegetarian?
Yes.
Life?
Oh God, yes.
But I know some of them when they come abroad.
No, these people. No, they've. Most of them have never even left Srirangam. You know, they probably never even left the village. No, you know, they're very. You know, they're very insulated. In fact, the young boys who performed it after watching the Arayar Seve only one time, they performed it after just seeing it, I was shocked. They're like, oh, well, you know, the commentary is available. So it's just a question of memorizing the commentaries. And, you know, if you know a little bit of Bharatanatyam, so we can create our own interpretation. So this idea that, you know, there's nothing special about it. So the commentaries are available. So we just by heart the commentaries. The Alvar songs are available. So we just by heart the songs, and we can construct our own Arayar Seve, right? And so what's the big deal? We just watched it one time, so we know how it is. And there's this idea. So obviously, if I'm able to perform Arayar Seve after just one time of watching it, that must mean it's divinely inspired, divinely mandated. So I was asking Madhu, one of the young boys who performed this, I said, what have you told the Arayars in Srirangam? Because he's very close to the Srirangam Arayars. Have you told them that you're doing this? Like, no, never. If I told them that I'm performing this, they would never talk to me. I would never be able to go to Srirangam again. You know, so there's an awareness that what they're doing is somewhat... Okay, thank you.